Before we begin, I would like you to just lie down, rest, and just do some lovely deep breathing through your diaphragm. Put your hand on your lungs and just hold it steady and still and breathe out through your diaphragm located just under your lungs. And breathe in and out. And breathe in and out. Breathe in and out. The Canary by Catherine Mansfield. You see that big nail to the right of the front of the door? I can scarcely look at it, even now, and yet I could not bear to take it out. I should like to think it was there always, even after my time. I sometimes hear the next people saying, there must have been a cage hanging from there, and it comforts me. I feel he's not quite forgotten. You cannot imagine how wonderfully he sang. It was not like the singing of other canaries, and that isn't just my fancy. Often, from the window, I used to see people stop at the gate to listen, or they would lean over the fence by the mock orange for quite a long time, carried away. I suppose it sounds absurd to you. It wouldn't if you'd heard him, but it really seemed to me that he sang a whole song with a beginning and an end to them. For instance, when I'd finished the house in the afternoon and changed my shirt and brought my sewing onto the veranda here, he used to hop, hop, hop from one perch to the other, tap against the bars, as if to attract my attention, sip a little water, just as a professional singer might, and then break into a song so exquisite that I had to put my needle down to listen to him. I can't describe it. I wish I could. But it was always the same every afternoon, and I felt that I understood every note of it. I loved him. Ah, how I loved him. Perhaps it doesn't matter so very much what one loves in the world, but love something one must. Of course, there was always my little house and the garden, but for some reason, they were never enough. Flowers respond wonderfully, but they don't sympathize. Then I loved the evening star. Does that sound foolish? I used to go into the backyard after sunset and wait for it until it shone above the dark gum tree. I used to whisper, "There you are, my darling." And just in that first moment, it seemed to be shining for me alone. It seemed to understand this. Something which is like longing, and yet it's not longing or regret. It is more like regret. And yet, regret for what? I have so much to be thankful for. But after he came into my life, I forgot the evening star. I didn't need it anymore. But it was strange. When the man came to the door with birds to sell, he'd held him up in his tiny cage, and instead of fluttering like the poor little goldfinches, he gave a faint, small chirp. I found myself saying, just as I had said to the star over the gum tree, "There you are, my darling." From that moment, he was mine. It surprises me even now to remember how he and I shared each other's lives. The moment I came down in the morning and took the cloth off his cage, he greeted me with a drowsy little note. I knew it meant, Mrs. And then I hung him on the nail outside while I got my three young men their breakfast, and I never brought him in until we had the house to ourselves again. Then, when the washing up was done, it was quite a little entertainment. I spread a newspaper over the corner of the table, and when I put the cage on it, he used to beat with his wings despairingly, as if he didn't know what was coming. "You're a regular little actor," I used to scold him. I scraped the tray, dusted it with fresh sand, filled his seed and water tins, tucked a piece of chickweed and half a chinny between the bars. And I'm perfectly certain he understood and appreciated every item of this little performance. You see, by nature, he was exquisitely neat. There was never a speck on his perch, and you'd only to see him enjoy his bath to realise he had a real small passion for cleanliness. His bath was put in last, and the moment it was in, he positively leapt into it. First he fluttered one ring, then the other, and then he ducked his head and dabbled his breast feathers. Drops of water were scattered all over the kitchen, but still he would not get out. I used to say to him, "Now that's quite enough. You're only showing off." And at last he would hop out, standing on one leg, and begin to peck himself dry. Finally he gave a shake, a flick, a twitter, and he lifted his throat. Oh, I can hardly bear to recall it. I was always cleaning the knives at the time, and it almost seemed to me that the knives sang too as I rubbed them bright on the board. Company, you see, that's what he was. Perfect company. If you've lived alone, you will realise how precious that is. Of course, there were my three young boys who came in to supper every evening, and sometimes they stayed in the dining room afterwards, maybe reading the paper, but I could not expect them to be interested in the little things that made my day. I mean, why should they be? I was nothing to them. In fact, I overheard them one evening talking about me on the stairs as the scarecrow. No matter. It doesn't matter. Not in the least. I quite understand. They were young. Why should I mind? But I remember feeling so especially thankful that I was not quite alone that evening. I told him, after they'd gone out, I said, "Do you know they call me Mrs.?" And he put his head on one side and looked at me with his bright eye until I could not help laughing. It seemed to amuse him. Have you kept birds? If you haven't, all this must sound, well, perhaps exaggerated. People have the idea that birds are heartless and cold little creatures, not like dogs or cats. My washerwoman used to say on Mondays when she wondered why I didn't keep a nice fox terrier, "There's no comfort, miss, in a canary." Untrue. Dreadfully untrue. I remember one night I'd had a very awful dream. Dreams can be dreadfully cruel. Even after I'd woken up, I could not get over it. So I put on my dressing gown and I went down to the kitchen for a glass of water. It was a winter night and raining hard. I suppose I was still half asleep. Through the kitchen window that hadn't a blind, it seemed to me that the dark was staring in, spying. And suddenly I felt it was unbearable that I had no one to whom I could say, "I've had such a dreadful dream," or "hide me from the dark." I even covered my face for a minute. And there came a little sweet, sweet. His cage was on the table and the cloth had slit so that a chink of light shone through. "Sweet, sweet," said the darling little fellow again, softly, as much as to say, "I'm here, missus, I'm here." That was so beautifully comforting, I nearly cried. And now he's gone. I shall never have another bird, another pet of any kind. How could I? When I found him lying on his back with his eyes dim and his claws wrung, when I realised that never again should I hear the darling sing, something seemed to die in me. My heart felt hollow, as if it was his cage. I shall get over it, of course. I must. one can get over anything in time. And people always say I have a cheerful disposition. They are quite right, I think I have. All the same, without being morbid and giving way to memories and so on, I must confess that there does seem to me something sad in life. It is hard to say what it is. I don't mean the sorrow that we all know, like illness and poverty and death. No, it's something different. It is there, deep down, part of one like one's breathing. However hard I work and tire myself, I have only to stop to know it's there, waiting. I often wonder if somebody feels the same. One can never know, but it's extraordinary that under his sweet, joyful little singing, it was just this sadness. Ah, what is it that I heard?
It's not working. Let it play. I'm good.
Hello.
Working. Why? What's going on here? I'm told on it.